Good morning. The work I will speak about is object of PhD thesis of students Xavier Chavanne and Philippe Roche, and various people have contributed to this in the low temperature laboratory in Grenoble. I don't know if somebody needs introduction on convection, but I assume that everybody here knows about the basic of convection. So I start with a general arrangement of the experiment, which is a low temperature experiment. The fluid for convection is helium gas, and for one part helium, liquid helium, okay, normal liquid helium. The upper plate is cooled by bath, helium bath, and within a vacuum jacket. Important part from which I will speak are both are the plates, the way we measure the difference in temperature, which is a thermocouple, and the way we fill the cell, which is important too. Okay. Here. You see here the cold finger, which cools the plate, and here heater to regulate the plate, and heater to heat below the bottom plate. It's many, many. Then I shall come back on this this device. Okay. So, first of all, plate. Okay. Plates are made of oxygen-free high conductivity copper, and we measured the heat conductivity of this plate. Okay. We can measure the heat conductivity. Indeed, we measure the electrical conductivity, and the Wiedemann-Franz gives the heat conductivity. The way I think is known, you have two coils. And you look at the coupling between the upper coil and the lower coil across the plate. And you compare this coupling at high temperature, where the heat conductivity of the copper is well known, to the low temperature. Okay. And this gives a resistivity ratio, which in here is 180. Okay. The frequency are scaled like the conductivity, and so you have a resistivity ratio. And this gives 1,200 watts per meter and per K, which can be related to the maximum temperature difference you can have, whatever the way the plate is heated. It can, okay, you know that convection occurs by plumes, and so plumes can occur on one side or the other, and whatever the way it's heated, the maximum difference are typically 5 millik per watt, which is equivalent to a Nusselt of 5, 10 to the 5, which means that even at the highest Nusselt we measure, the correction due to the plates would be less than 1%. So now the walls. The walls are important. The walls are inox walls. Okay, and the conductivity, the total conductivity of the walls when the cell is empty, is two-thirds of the helium conductivity, the fluid conductivity inside, corresponding to Nusselt equal 1. Okay. It's not totally negligible. Obviously, we corrected it we corrected it. We corrected it in the usual way, what is subtracting the conductivity of the walls to the real conductivity we measure. We measure the conductivity. That is, we measure with the empty cell, and we are sure to have the empty cell because we take the caution to put no helium at all inside the cell until we are cold, totally cold. So all things are cold only by conduction by the walls. Okay, and then we measure the heat conductivity, and that's empty heat conductivity. And then we fill with a small pressure of helium inside, and we can check because we know also the conductivity of helium. So we have cross check of the conductivity of the walls. Sidewalls. Sidewalls of the cell. Okay. Another important point is the filling. Okay. The filling, we have various caution to take. First, to avoid interaction with the bath, we have to close the cell at cold. Okay, so it's closed air by valve in the bath. So the cell is only connected to this part of tube and not to all the path toward the high temperature. Also, an important point is this: you know, some of the experiments are made at temperature higher than at pressure higher than the atmospheric pressure, which means that if you're directly connected to the bath, helium will condensate in the tube and then fall as drop in the cell. So we use this siphon with a poorly conducting part here, which well determines the point where the temperature goes from the temperature of the plate to the temperature of the bath, and also avoid liquid to fall down in the cell. The filling, the density, another point which is important is to know the density, particularly when you're close to the critical point of helium, because, you know, at this point, a small change in pressure or a small change in temperature can make an enormous change in density. So the best variable to know the properties of helium is the density. And we directly measure the density because we have a calibrated volume at room temperature, and we fill the cell through this calibrated volume. That is, we fill the calibrated volume and we empty it in the cell, knowing thus exactly the amount of helium, the mass of helium you put in the cell. And we cross-check this by when we know the density and knowing the properties of helium, you can know exactly what is the temperature where condensation occurs. So cooling down, you check that the temperature where you have the condensation is well the good one at this density. To me? No. We did measure the pressure. We measure the density. Measuring the pressure, we measure it at low density at beginning. For a lower density, we measure the pressure. But for the highest density, it's not safe. We can make errors with measurement of pressure. Okay. So it's better to measure the density. And also, we measure the pressure when the temperature is well known at the filling, okay. And then we close the valve, and we do not open it during all the experiment. Okay, I think. It's all for this. If you have a question, I come back on the thermocouple. No, it's made of 10 pairs of superconducting wires, black one, and gold iron alloy, which makes total sensitivity of 130 microvolts per K. Okay. And the point in the experiment, we measure this tension within 3 nanovolts. But it's not obvious because, you know, the tension is taken by copper wires, but it's very difficult to have copper wires totally identical. Okay, there is always impurities, and so the two copper wires are not totally identical. And as they are between 4K and 300K for measurement, it gives a residual thermocouple, which is something like 100 nanovolts to 200 nanovolts. So to subtract it, we use this following trick, which is to bypass it via a superconducting wire. So when the superconducting wire is called, you have only the contribution by the wires, the copper wires. And when you hit the superconducting wire here, then it takes a resistance of 500 ohms, which is far bigger than the resistance of the thermocouple. And thus, you have a total tension. And by difference, you have the tension due only to the thermocouple. And we check it by putting superfluid helium inside the cell. And then the temperature difference must be zero. And we find 1 nanovolt, okay, which is the resolution of our nanometer, nanovolt meter. So it works. Yeah, well. This is
the wires you showed there.
Yeah, they are arranged the following way. Yeah. Mm-hmm. The cell. Yeah. It is thermally anchored here and above. Okay. And we make simulation to see what can be, due to the conductivity of the cell, the difference of temperature between this point and another point of, and it's negligible, totally negligible. So, dimensional analysis says that, as it's marked here, the temperature resolution on the difference is 30 micro K, typically, 30 micro K. That using this thermocouple, you have a precision, okay, it depends, 30 micro K in absolute, or 1%. If it is large, because okay, these are the raw data, and you can see that indeed that the same Rayleigh number, it seems to give different values of the Nusselt, even if the Prandtl number doesn't change typically up to here, the Prandtl number doesn't change its points as in gas. Okay. And the difference here, particularly the change in the threshold here, is due to the adiabatic gradient effect. See, on the 8th of the cell, which is 20 centimeters, you're sensitive to the adiabatic gradient effect. That is to the fact that the gas expands when going up in gravity. And fortunately, this can be corrected. The adiabatic difference corresponds to 0.4 millik at the lower pressures and up to 0.8 millik close to the critical point. And so you see it's more. And if you want to correct this, which is a point which is very close to adiabatic gradient, you have to be very precise on the temperature difference. And here this is corrected. You see that everything goes well on a single, a single curve as far as the Prandtl doesn't change. Here there is some dispersion, which could be due to the Prandtl or to other things, because the difficulty sometimes, there can be difficulties with the properties of helium if they are not well defined. What we see in general, that there is a good coherence between different densities if we have the same Rayleigh and the same Prandtl. I shall come back. But particularly on one point, which corresponds to the liquid, I shall come back. You see the lower points here seems a little separated from the others, and I shall come back. But anyway, the main result is that we depart from the general tendency of low Rayleigh up to 10 to 11. At 10 to 11, it changes and it goes up. And this is a difference with previous studies, in particular that of Xia Xiongwu in Chicago, and who saw typically a single power low, and also in Oregon they saw also a single power low all the range. But you see, the difference is so huge here. It's factor 2. Okay. So it cannot be anyway. One can see a bone, but clearly it's different regime.
You're comparing to 2.7.
Yeah. In comparing to 2.7.
There's lots of experimental evidence that the exponent gradually increases.
Okay, but I know.
The difference is not as big as.
No, simply I don't see. Okay. My point is simply that the over experiment gives something which would be coherent with a single power low in this range. Okay, and I simply point the difference there is here. Okay. I don't say that it's 2.7. That's another point we can discuss about. I present the experiment. Okay. Okay, anyway, back to recently the reference, and it's not a bad reference, is a 2.7 power low. And here is a compensated plot. And which is important here, that you know, the point where there is departure from this general tendency, say, that is just also the point where, in general, the Prandtl begins to change because the pressure becomes to be rather high. So we had to verify that this was not a Prandtl effect. Okay. So we used the helium liquid to have a single Prandtl, a Prandtl which is close to 0.7 from the lowest Rayleigh to nearly 10 to the 13. Here, this point from here to here are with liquid. But recently we discovered that this the open points correspond to what the McCarthy compilation gives for properties of liquid. But recently there was a compilation by Donnelly et al. On the properties of helium close to the vaporization equilibrium liquid gas, and this suggests a little change. So you see that for liquid there can be an uncertainty on the position, but the general tendency, that is a change in the slope, is clear. Okay, and thus it cannot be attributed to simply a Prandtl effect. Now, okay, I can present what's important also, this. You see, for example, if I collect the points which have a Prandtl between 3 and 4, okay, on more than 2 orders of magnitude in Rayleigh, and for densities which are different, okay, I didn't point the different densities, but there is at least 3 different densities in this plot, and they are all rather coherent. Okay. So for the gas, it seems not to have too much problems with properties of helium. Equal Rayleigh and Prandtl give the same result. So that's for the thermal measurement, and I want to go to characterize this new regime to the velocity measurement. To look at the velocity measurement, we use 2 thermometers inside the cell. You see the location of the thermometers. 2 thermometers, one above the other, 2 millimeters apart. And we look for the correlation between the two. That is the time lag between the 2 signals. And indeed, it's about the third of the radius. 1/3 of the radius. Excuse me? Yes, yes. Oh, exactly. Yes. Exactly. 2 millimeters, it's 0.2 millimeter thermometer. Okay. Well, indeed, one can show that the frequency response between the 2 signals, 2 thermometers, is a Fourier transform of the distribution of time lags. Take a simple case. Assume that there is only a time lag tau or minus tau, depending if it goes one way or the other. Then the frequency response will be depend on the probability of going up or down. And this gives the phase for the frequency response, which is with the tangent, is related to the tangent of omega tau. Which means that if P plus is close to P minus, you have a phi which is very small compared to omega tau. It's this factor multiplied by omega tau. But if omega tau equals 90 degrees, then the tangent is infinite. And so phi is also 90 degrees. And this is what we observe. That is the phase makes a rapid rotation at some frequency, which gives a typical tau, a typical time between time lag between the 2 thermometers. And this is the way we measure a time lag. Okay, we can also directly take the Fourier transform of the frequency response, and this gives a distribution of time lags, which is typically, here you see, something which is centered on zero. Zero, it could be curious, zero. Zero is infinite velocity. But in fact, it means simply that the structure are flat and it comes like this. Okay. But the typical peak here gives an idea of the Reynolds number. And this Reynolds number, in agreement with other studies, goes about all the way close to 0.5 in Rayleigh number. And the minimum of dispersion of points is obtained by putting this power on the Prandtl number. Close to 0.5. It's this is made for 0.49. Okay. This Rayleigh point. Okay. This is Rayleigh 0.5. Reynolds Prandtl to the 0.7 is Rayleigh 0.5.
How much does Prandtl vary?
The Prandtl goes up to 6 at the end. There is point where it is 6. Okay. Obviously, when you put 0.75, it's hard to see the difference. Okay. Yeah, I come to it. For the it's 3 million points. That's the important point. You know, you take a frequency measurement which allows to see all the frequencies in the signal, which means the correspond to the highest frequencies, and you take 3 million points of this, which for the return time it corresponds to a few thousand of return times.
Few.
Yeah. It, okay. You ask the time.
Looking at that picture, you hardly need to go below 1 hertz. So, you could presumably measure this with a short-term window.
Yes, but the noise would be horrible. No, it takes a very long time to concentrate on such a small noise. The file is very noisy. For low pressure, it's 20 hours typically.
But presumably, there's a trade off between.
There is other ways to look at this. You can simply take a window of the signal and the over. And match each other. Okay, this is tricky because if you take too large a window, it averages to zero. A too small a window, you have no precision, and so you feel not very easy because you have a distribution of time lags which depend on the window you choose. Obviously, there is some range of windows where it is rather stable, but. You feel not very easy. The good way to look at is to know that we have the distribution of time lag. If you believe in the fact that one signal is simply delayed compared to the other, we have, by the frequency response, the distribution of time lag. So at least it's cross-check. If the distribution of time lag you obtain by this windowing is the same than here, it's okay. But you need this cross-check. Okay. We made also this. Typically, the good window was something like 500 points. Okay, so that's this measurement who made us to think that what occurred was a transition in the boundary layer, which... you probably know that with the product Nusselt relay, you have a dissipation, viscous dissipation in the cell. And so looking at the ratio between Nusselt relay and Reynolds cube gives a friction coefficient, typically. That's the friction coefficient. And having a friction coefficient as Reynolds to the minus 1/2 means that you have a laminar Blasius type. Dissipation against the walls. And clearly, at the point where there is a departure from the Lorelei tendency, you have also a change in this friction coefficient, which occurs at Reynolds number, which are very close to what you have on a flat surface. Okay, when you look at transition toward the turbulence for boundary layers on a flat surface, you obtain this at Reynolds, which are close to this one. So it's rather reasonable, but it has to check to be checked by other ways. Okay. That's the dissipation divided by Reynolds cube is the definition of the skin friction coefficient. Okay. We measure the velocity in the middle. Okay. So we have and that's the way also people who look at the friction coefficient of friction, they also give the velocity at large distance. To measure the Reynolds, that's the same. Okay, we compare the same. Yes, no, the height of the cell. Okay. Not the maximum typical velocity. Okay, it's a typical time lag, which gives the velocity. Typical time lag between the two thermometers gives a velocity via the distance between the thermometer. But, okay, we have to distinguish between interpretation and measurement, okay? And so I come back on this, I measure the velocity like this, okay? There is a turn, the phase goes to 90 degrees at some point, it gives a time, and this time gives a velocity. And that's our velocity. Now, that's not a mean velocity, but a mean time lag. Okay, a typical time lag. What it corresponds to is the width. Typically, you have also this, if you take this as a square distribution, okay, and it would give the same. At the square distribution, you have a sinus cardinal, and it goes to 90 degrees at some typical point, and this gives a typical time, which would be the width of the distribution. So you can see it as a measurement of the width of the distribution time lag. That's a typical time lag, which gives a typical velocity. Yeah, I didn't. Ah, in centimeter per second, something like this. Okay, you see, there is with free fall velocity, there is a factor, say, 10 to 20, typically. It goes, as it goes like 0.5, Rayleigh 0.5, it goes also like the free fall velocity. And this gives something like typically 1 centimeter per second if the difference of temperature is reasonable, okay, that's close to 100 millik. Close to 100 millik, it gives something like centimeter per second, okay. Yeah, you can see this here, okay? It's 0.1, it's 0.1 second for 2 millimeter, which is 2 centimeters per second. Okay, so we spoke also of fluctuation of temperature. Okay, that's an amazing point. But we have to be very careful with spectra. You see, if we look for the low Rayleigh numbers, low, under 10 to 11, the spectrum, as everyone, we find a nice spectrum, which has a nice slope, which could be given a slope of 7.5. 7.5 looks nice, okay? But you can look at other things, which is, in principle, the same. Looking at the structure function, second order structure function, and the slope of the second order structure function. And we made it as a frequency, the log of the 10 log of the frequency in Hertz.
Where is the turnover time?
Turnover time is here. Okay. You know, I don't call this a peak, okay? Yes, but I have much better. You know, the precedent here, I hardly can go to better than a factor 2 of error here. And with what I had, I had better than 10% of precision. No. No, no, no. The peak is good in the boundary layer, not in the middle. Yeah, I made the measurement, okay? So I well remember there was a thermometer in the boundary layer and a thermometer in the center. The thermometer in boundary layer show a good peak, okay? And which was interesting is that while there was no good peak in the middle, anyway there was a good correlation with boundary layer, okay? Mm-hmm. Why? Why it would be peak?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, I agree. No, not the thermocouple. That's from the thermometers inside the cell.
Right in the center, not in the boundary layer.
Not in the boundary layer.
And it's either one of the two that you use for the velocity.
Yes.
Either one,
yeah.
And where are we in the Rayleigh number?
The Rayleigh number are typically here it's 10 to the 10. Okay, it's 4 10 to the 10. Okay, that's not always a good way to name the. Sometimes you have twice the same name and it's not very good. But which is amazing is that if you look at the slope of the structure function, second order structure function. This is the slope of the second order structure function, and as you remark, typically there is small, I don't know, but not too big turbulence ratio. So I can use the Taylor hypothesis. I hope I can use the Taylor hypothesis, and I use it using the velocity I determine before to transform the time in length. Okay. And what I find, this is a log in centimeters, so it means 30 centimeters. At 30 centimeters, the correlation length is here. That is, there is no more correlation between the autocorrelation between the time, the measurement. Okay. And what you see here is measurements at different Rayleigh numbers, and that's rather nice because you see that there is a general tendency, and depending on the Rayleigh number, you go to dissipation. Dissipation means a slope 2, okay, for this structure function. So everything goes to slope 2, but at different distance, depending on the Rayleigh number. That's natural. The dissipation occurs sooner or later, okay. But everything starts from the same curve. And you see that, by no way, this general tendency goes to 0.4, while 7.5 for the spectrum would give 0.4 for the final slope in the structure function. This more goes to, okay, it could go to further. 0.6, 0.7.
Are these taken by just the Fourier transform of what you just showed?
Yeah, yes, not even. We take the signal, and either we make the... There is no free height. There is a free Rayleigh numbers.
What's the difference between the three curves? The free
curves is the Rayleigh number.
Oh, the free Rayleigh
numbers. Free Rayleigh numbers.
Well, what are those free Rayleigh numbers?
Free Rayleigh numbers are 10 to the 7, typically 10 to the 9 and 10 to the 10. Okay. So the last one corresponds to the spectrum I show exactly. That's the same data than that shown in... To me? No, okay. You know, that's hard. The scaling region obviously would occur later. Okay. Yeah, there is no real scaling region. But that's a very severe test of a scaling region, okay? Even in usual turbulence, you need very large turbulence to have something rather flat air, okay? Yeah. It looks like a nice inertial range, and the slope is not the good one. It tends to go to a constant. That's the slope. That's a derivative, okay. Logarithmic derivative of a structure function. And it, for a dissipative case, it goes to 2. So that's interesting, and also which is interesting is what occurs after the transition, okay, for Higer. And here, the picture is completely different. You see, I reproduce the preceding one here, and you see that after the transition, it's continuous. While it begins at the same length, it's always 30 centimeters, but clearly the behavior is completely different. It does not even tend toward a constant. It's continuous. Okay. The variation of the slope is continuous. And it's important because, you know, an important point is that with the structure function, we can check the problems which has been raised upon the results of Xiaxiong-Wu, that the thermometer could be too big. Okay, the size of the thermometer, you see it here. Okay, the size of the thermometer is here. The influence of the size of the thermometer begins when you go here, because you see... It goes to simili dissipation always here. Okay. And so you can say that the influence of the size of the thermometer goes up to 1 millimeter, but obviously not to 1 centimeter. Okay. And for a scale of 1 centimeter, there is anyway a large difference between a large Rayleigh and a small Rayleigh. So something occurs, that's clear. And if you look at the spectrum now, these ones are 10 to the 12 and 10 to the 13. And if you look at the spectrum, it's for 6 to the 12, as you see. You obtain a spectrum which is different from the preceding one. See, and the difference is exactly what Xiaxiong-Wu noted, that it looks like if it were expanded in log. Okay. But it can be interpreted in various ways. Okay, you can also say that you have no two slopes, one something like this, and one something like this. Okay. But anyway, I find it's better on the slope of the structure function. You see clearly that things are different from the preceding case. Another check, okay, so this didn't say if it is turbulent or not, but it says that something occurs between before the rise and the slope of Nusselt and after. Okay. And to check, one idea we had to check if it were really the turbulence of the boundary layer which occurred was to say, okay, the prediction for the regime, the ultimate regime when it is turbulent, is that Nusselt would go like Rayleigh 0.5. We don't see 0.5, we see less. But it's easily interpreted by saying that there is a logarithmic correction. And the logarithmic correction comes from the fact that the viscous sublayer has a dependence with the Reynolds and thus with the Rayleigh. A way to suppress this dependence is to put some roughness of the plate and of the walls. Then you fix the sublayer. And then you should have 0.5 behavior. That's what we made. We used a rough cell with which is a line, a straight, I don't know, a sillon in English, but it's 0.1 millimeter both on 8 and off side. Okay, so it's square. And it's regular both in the walls and in the plate. Okay. And 0.1 millimeter means 0.1 millimeter for the boundary layer means 500 for the Nusselt number. And the Nusselt number 500 is just after the transition, and it's something like here. And from here to following, you have a slope which is here, exactly 0.5. Okay, obviously here you can see it begins after there is some saturation. But you know, the rise in Nusselt is something like a factor 10. And when the size of the boundary layer becomes a tenth of this teeth, okay, this roughness, you cannot speak of roughness, okay? It follows a new surface. And so I think it's natural that the model of roughness to fix the sublayer is no more valid. Okay. But at least for nearly one order of magnitude in Nusselt and nearly two orders of magnitude in Rayleigh, we have a slope which now is a point... I realize that, unfortunately, it's in yellow. If somebody has a very nice ace, they can see the whole point with... You can see the point. The yellow. That's not particularly good, but... I realize it now. Okay, but I finish like this. Okay. I finish like this, I think it's better.
Let me get something straight now. In the smooth case, the transition was at 10 to the 11, right? And now it's at 10 to the 12, is that right?
Yeah. It's not 10 to the 12, it's less easy to see. Okay. Say it could be 10 to 12. Yeah. It's true that if you make the cut between this and this, it would be more 10 to 12 than 10 to, 10 to 11. But, anyway, that's a pity when don't see the preceding ones inside because indeed we are completely in agreement within the error bar, up to the point where it begins to be 0.5. They follow.
What does rough mean?
What
do you mean by rough?
Okay, rough. Rough is the... Okay, I can... That's a pity, yeah. Okay, there is a diagram. Okay, so half is something like this. It's square. Okay. Both in the plates and in the walls. The point here, at the point here, you have a boundary layer thickness which is exactly this. Yeah, I see.
Is there any more questions? Lada.
Okay.
Obviously, it's easy to explain in terms of the gamma or formula of a scale. What it means is that somewhere in the middle of this polynomial prime scale, you have a Bogdan rank. And for the values which are higher than the Bogdan scale or lower, the temperature becomes different. But the process will have to develop. And the Bogdan rank scale depends on the rate number. And there is a general tendency in our data that we can see that that's the formation.
But what I
seven bits at the low frequency,
right,
and 5/3 at the higher frequency.
Yeah.
It depends very large. It's a complicated question because the Bogdan rank scale, you can't help with the group or the whole cell. It's very very measured. It's measured both to the wall. The Bogdan rank scale can't be measured the size of the cell. It can be smaller. So it's a complicated question, but generally the picture we feel is like
that. The question I have then. Excuse me.
Yes.
The question here is that on that's the same data, and we look at the structure function, and I do not see either the 7/5, which would be 0.4, or over top. There is nothing. It's straight. Okay. Maybe there is something here, which begins. Okay, but it's not very clear. Okay. And that's the same data, and that's a good way to look at.
Yeah, well, I don't know how the spectrum looks for this particular data. Right? It depends when you measure.
Well, I think the
that's the same data. That's the same data.
But it's the same data plus Taylor
hypothesis. No, that's the same data. Excuse me. That's the same data.
Time structure function.
The interpretation can be different through the Taylor hypothesis, but that's the same data. No. But if I put here time, and not R, that's the same. Okay? It doesn't depend on the name of the variable.
Okay.
Just one comment you were about to make. If you use a food code to use the time of life,
yeah. Excuse me. I'm in agreement with what you said, but it depends of what you call the RMS and the mean. If you look at such a distribution of time lags, the average velocity you obtain from all the time lags is nearly zero. Okay. And if you look at the phase, okay, the average velocity you mean is the slope of this at low frequency, and it's nearly zero. While what you measure is a typical velocity, which is no more the average than over. It's a typical velocity. Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
you just now imagine that you have a situation, that you have the rotation one way, then it changes the direction after a while, going the other way, you will get exactly the same.
Exactly. But that's an interpretation. And then I simply say that I have a measurement, and I don't know if it is due to return of this or to some fluctuation more rapid. Okay.
Well, I guess the question is, how does the distribution
of time lags
depend on the averaging window?
No. The way we obtain it, it depends on the reality of the fact that one signal is simply delayed versus the other. Once you have made this hypothesis, you find that the frequency response is simply the Fourier transform of the distribution of time lag. So I obtain like this. No, there is no window here. There is no window here. I simply Fourier transform the frequency response.
Yeah. Is the order of closest to the miles and miles faster, and then you really can see the Bojano scale. And you can see that also the old of Google is there, the high frequency domain is slope of roughly -2.4.
You know, you.
It won't occur, but at this Rayleigh number, it eventually will occur. I really think we need to. I mean, there's a lot of questions we need to address, and we need to see the
following
experiment
one.
Before really we start doing a lot more exchange here. So let's thank our speaker one more time.